This episode of To The Journey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more details.
This is Robert Picardo, the emergency medical hologram from Star Trek Voyager, and you're listening to Trek FM.
I think it's safe to say that no one on this crew has been more obsessed with getting home than I have. But when I think about everything we've been through together, maybe it's not the destination that matters. Maybe it's the journey. And if that journey takes a little longer, so we can do something we all believe in, I can't think of any place I'd rather be, or any people I'd rather be with.
To the journey.
You're here.
To the journey.
Hello everyone at home and welcome. This is To The Journey. I'm your co-host Suzanne Williamson, and with me as always are...
Kay Shaw and...
Zachary Frueling.
So a few weeks ago when we were doing our Ask Me Anything episode, there was one question that we all wanted to delve into just a little bit more. And that was a question from Shoab Mirza about our favorite Tuvok Unhinged moments or episodes. So... here we go.
I don't know about you guys, but I'm ready to talk some Tuvok. Tuvok is my boy. He's one of my favorite characters on Voyager.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to talking about Tuvok, actually. I think Tuvok's probably a character that I probably haven't thought about as much as some of the others or delved into quite as much as the others, so I'm looking forward to this. This is going to be good.
Oh, it's going to be great. Tim Russ was amazing. He played Tuvok perfectly. Stoic, yet always that little hint of comedy just under the surface. You could see it there.
Yeah, it must be really difficult to play a character like that that's got to be really, really deadpan so much of the time.
Yeah.
It must be really, really hard. I can just imagine they've had moments on the set when they've been cracking up and having jokes and stuff, and then he's got to go straight back into it, and it must be, yeah, it must be a challenge.
That, and he was one of the tricksters on set.
Yeah.
Always getting into stuff.
I'm just amazed at how much subtlety he was able to work into his characterization of Tuvok. He reminds me a lot of Leonard Nimoy's ability to subtly portray emotions while doing a relatively stoic character in Spock. Mm-hmm. He was able to channel that subtlety, subtle facial movements, subtle eyebrow raises, and convey a wealth of emotion with very few words.
Mm. Yes.
Yeah.
And definitely. That takes a lot of talent.
Yeah, and he was there with it right from the off as well. You know, you just... He was the Vulcan persona instantly. So this guy's done his homework. You know, he's really worked hard to hone this.
But Tuvok doesn't always keep his cool. Sometimes we get Tuvok unhinged.
Yeah, and that's what we're going to talk about tonight.
Yes. I'm just going to throw this out there. The scene from Meld after Tuvok mind melds with Lon Suter and then ends up on the holodeck strangling holographic Neelix. I love that scene a little more than I should. Possibly because Neelix doesn't really deserve that much anger. But sometimes, yeah, he really does.
You were wishing that was real, weren't you, Suzanne?
I was. It's like, it's about time, you annoying little...
Why are you hating on Neelix? I don't understand. I like Neelix. What's wrong with you?
He gets a little too pushy where Tuvok is involved. Leave the man alone. He just wants to chill and look out the window.
We know that Tuvok and Neelix are a little dysfunctional. It's a love-hate relationship.
Yeah. Neelix loves him. Tuvok hates him.
How would you say this mind meld compares with, say, Kim Cattrall's mind meld in Star Trek VI?
I don't think it was quite as invasive and kind of... Kim Cattrall's mind meld, that was scary to me.
Yeah, I don't
know. It was
like
almost kind of rapey. I really didn't like that.
That's how I see that as well, yeah. That scene makes me squirm out of my chair a bit.
Yeah.
but it's pretty intense.
Why do you think that mind melds are such an emotional thing for Vulcans? Why do we see so many unhinged moments for Vulcans in general? And maybe for Tuvok in particular, why do they seem to revolve around mind melds?
I think it's because whomever they're melding with, that's opening them up to foreign emotions, and they're just being, like, it's an onslaught. Someone that isn't repressing everything that they have, it's just throwing them right at them. And that would be difficult to deal with.
And I guess it's a two-way street. Like, it's also releasing emotions, right? I mean, it's...
Yeah.
Yeah, I see it the same way Suzanne was saying. It's like they're already suppressing their own emotions, and they have another set of emotions they have to handle as well. So it's a bit of a floodgate type thing.
So it's like an emergency emotional spillway.
Yes.
It is.
That's topical.
With all these rains here in California, I had to use a spillway metaphor to describe Vulcan emotions.
# emotional spillway.
But that Neelix and Tuvok scene, yeah, that's pretty intense. I could see anyone other one of the crew sort of throttling Neelix and it being like really, you know, you'd see it and you'd think, yeah, that could totally be happening. But Tuvok, it's just like it's impact.
I would have liked to have seen Captain Janeway doing that.
Throttling Neelix.
I think just a lot of actors don't do intense all that well. And Tim Russ, as mild-mannered as he is, can do an amazingly intense character when he needs to.
Yeah, absolutely.
No, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, he just shines in that episode generally. I mean, later on when they've got him in sickbay behind the force field and he's raving at Janeway, let me out the force field, I'm going to kill him.
Ugh.
And all this.
That was phenomenal.
That is amazing. That is one of his best performances, I think.
The power radiating off of him was so palpable. It was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Keep him back there because he's dangerous.
I love that bit where they're refusing and the doctor's doing the countdown for the treatment and going, oh, it's only another so long. He tries on Janeway, tries on Kes, doesn't work. And then he's just like, gets his hand and he just goes on the force field like that. And it's just like, whoa. And then you just get this sense of like all of the emotion and kind of turmoil that's contained in there. Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Incredible.
I mean, I'm not an actor, so I don't really know the answer to this, but I wonder how much effort it takes to rally that much energy to portray a scene like that.
That would be very draining. Very draining to put so much heart and so much.
Do you have to like rally so much energy? You like do it once and like once you do it once, you're spent? Or can you do that like 10 times in a row?
Depending on how much energy you're using. If it's as much as I think he was using, I would say 2 times tops would be what he would be able to do before he would have to take a break.
Yeah, he was definitely going all out in that scene.
He was in their heart and soul, all of him, in that episode.
Yeah. And we get beautiful reaction from Janeway as well. I just love her standing there and you just getting, like you get with Tuvok normally, you're just getting it all in facial expressions. She just got the pressed lips and the kind of, she's half kind of stoic, half, oh my God, what's happening to you kind of thing.
Yeah. Yeah.
Amazing. It's just such an intense scene, so I have to put that really high up there on my list of unhinged moments. We have the bit where he smashes his quarters up as well. Janeway goes in there and she sees it all, and then there's just this shot of his profile as he's sitting on the floor. That's incredible. And then he says, "You need to leave for your own safety," and he's just shaking and a sweat on his face.
And her realization at that point that things have gone really, really wrong.
Yeah, because she gets the message, obviously, from the computer, which we don't hear, because he says, tell the computer I'm no longer fit for duty. Mm-hmm. Tell Janeway. And then she's sort of marching down there. She's like, Tuvok, what's wrong? And then she opens the door. She's like, whoa, more than I thought.
My bad. I'll come back later.
Whoa.
And you know, just off screen, there's some dude with like a spritz bottle with like Wesson cooking oil, like spraying sweat drops on his face.
Yeah. But yeah, that's a really intense episode all round.
So as I was thinking about Tuvok unhinged moments, there were kind of two questions that came to my mind. One is, why do we find these unhinged moments so appealing in the first place? What's so amazingly compelling about seeing a logical character like a Vulcan get unhinged and get out of control? It got me thinking that we're all kind of like that. We're all kind of living in a state of unhingement compared to Vulcans, right? We're humans, we're emotional, we're unhinged compared to Vulcans. So I think we can relate to it. But the next question I had is, what is uniquely Tuvok? I mean, we see lots of Vulcans get unhinged in a lot of different contexts, from Spock all the way through to T'Pol. What is uniquely Tuvok about the way he gets unhinged?
I think out of the three sort of biggest Vulcan characters that we get in Star Trek, so you mentioned them there, Spock, Tuvok, and T'Pol. I think Tuvok is generally the most controlled most of the time, because Spock has his human side, so there's always a bit less of that intenseness about Spock. He's still got the logic there, but I don't feel the same level of really intense kind of logic straight down the line Vulcan stuff from Spock as I do from Tuvok.
See, I get the sense that Spock's like a romantic, you know. And when he gets unhinged, he gets like weepy, right? When Tuvok gets unhinged, he gets angry. Yeah. He gets mad.
Angry Tuvok.
And then T'Pol, I think it's more difficult to compare T'Pol because she's at an earlier stage of like the Vulcan development, if you like, and they've still got this whole business where they're split into two, and the main part of the Vulcans aren't even doing mind melds yet and stuff like that. You know, they're very much in two camps about how they should approach everything. So I think at that stage, I think we see Vulcans in Enterprise generally being more emotional, finding the control less easy. So I think Tuvok's probably the purest example of a Vulcan as a main character that we see in Star Trek.
The most repressed, you're
saying. Well, repressed. I don't know. Because that's putting a human slant on it, isn't it? And I think, as you alluded to, you know, we see a lot of stories where the focus on the Vulcan story is, oh, let's make the Vulcan lose their logic. That's always the thing that we're trying to do with them. That's always what the topic is when we're trying to do the Vulcan story. And it's almost like we're making a mockery of the fact that they have this different way of looking at things. And I think because we see it from our point of view, we see it as, oh, it's repression, it's not healthy for them, blah blah blah. But I think when we see what happens to Tuvok when that mask slips, at that point we think, oh well, you know, maybe this is a good thing and maybe it works for them. It's just not the way we do things, and that's why we find it difficult to understand. Sometimes I feel like I wish that the normal way of being a Vulcans was approached in a slightly different way.
But we also get some great moments where Tuvok is sharing the Vulcan culture and trying to get different people to understand or accept or embrace.
Yeah.
With Kes, he taught her how to center herself, everything like that. And in Alter Ego, when he shows Harry Kim how to suppress the emotions that he's feeling about a holographic character, just to aid him in getting over the character. He's trying to share his culture, and I like that. I would have liked to have seen more of that.
Yeah.
Instead of, you know, him becoming unhinged as a way to have a Tuvok episode.
I think one of the things I love about Tuvok, as opposed to other portrayals of Vulcans that we see in Star Trek, is that in Tuvok, we really get to see an example of how logic and self-discipline and control can prevent Vulcans from spiraling into this destructive emotional spiral. And I'm thinking of the beginning of the episode Gravity, when we see a young Tuvok who's smitten with a classmate and he's in this torrent of emotions, and he gets a lesson from an old Vulcan master about how logic and discipline and self-control can actually free you to be the best version of yourself and free you emotionally from the bonds of this emotional torrent. And I think we get to see that more clearly with Tuvok than we see in any other Vulcan.
Yeah, I agree with that. Definitely.
Oh, definitely.
I think probably my biggest frustration is that I feel like a lot of the time the Vulcan way of being is considered to be something negative. And it's not that people say it's negative. Mm-hmm. It's just the way that they behave towards it and what they say and how they act implies that they think that it's something negative. Oh, you just need to loosen up. Oh, you just need to have a good time. Oh, you're really boring and all this type of thing. And it's a lack of understanding, I think, more than anything else. And it's difficult for us to put ourselves in that position, which is why I think people struggle to really understand it fully.
And I guess that's why this means so much to me. I've been in periods in my life when I felt like I've been in an emotional spiral and my wheels are spinning and I need a little bit of self-control or someone to drag me out of that. And, you know, for me, it's not logic necessarily, but this idea of self-discipline and self-control, not letting your emotions run away with you or control you, has been an important growth process for me. So I can actually kind of relate to Vulcans in this way. I don't think of them as boring. I think of them as having learned those hard lessons about how to be the best versions of themselves. And that means... not letting their emotions run away with them.
Mm-hmm. And pretty much all of those things that you said, Kay, loosen up, have a good time, stop being so boring, are things that Neelix has said to Tuvok.
Yeah.
Lighten up, Mr. Vulcan.
Which is why he deserved to be throttled on the holodeck.
Yeah, exactly. And I think on some level, whilst he really likes Tuvok, Neelix fundamentally doesn't understand him.
Mm-hmm.
In the same way that Tuvok fundamentally doesn't understand Neelix, which is why they have this kind of push and pull kind of relationship. I don't think it's a love-hate relationship. I think it's just a we don't really know quite how to relate to each other kind of relationship. That's how it feels to me anyway.
But in Riddles, we really do get to see the bond that they've developed for each other and the fact that they, if not genuinely care for each other, they greatly respect each other. And we you know, deep down, it doesn't play on screen a lot of the time, but we get to see a glimpse of it.
Yeah. Yeah, I really like Riddles. Again, I feel like, you know, the Vulcan way is kind of suggested to be negative. Even Tuvok himself almost goes, Tuvok. Oh, well, I don't want to go back to being like that. Is that because he doesn't, or is that because of what everybody else has told him about how he is?
Definitely what everyone else has told him.
Yeah.
I want to make another cake.
Yeah. His cakes were pretty amazing.
I'm going to solve this with frosting.
Yeah.
And if you can solve it with frosting, it's a good day.
I think we get a real insight into the Neelix and Tuvok relationship there. I just love the fact that Tuvok implies, oh, well, you know, even if I don't show it the way that you wish that I would show it or the way that you understand, I do like you and I do have respect for you and, you know, we are friends. I just don't relate to you in the way that everybody else relates to you. And I thought that was really nice.
I think it was fun to see a different variety of coming unhinged, because oftentimes coming in for Vulcans means this emotional torrent. You know, they're getting violent or they're, you know, swept up in passion or something. Here we get to see, you know, kind of a quiet, artistic Tuvok who doesn't get a chance to be creative and fun. It's very lighthearted for coming unhinged.
It is. He does have some quite frustrated moments in that episode, though.
Oh, yeah. When he gets mad at the Kalto.
Yeah.
It's like, bah. I don't like this game.
Yeah.
You know, there's actually a deleted scene from that episode where Tuvok goes over to Chakotay and he says, Commander, I think I'd like to learn to whittle. Could you teach me how to do that?
Why did they cut that out? That should have stayed in there.
I think we need to do an extended version with that in there.
Chakotay needs more whittling.
He does. I think Tuvok the artist. Would be excellent at that. What do we think the first thing that Tuvok would whittle would be?
Ooh. Is this logical Tuvok or not so logical?
That was my question. Is this like, you know, unfun Tuvok or fun Tuvok?
I would say the first thing logical Tuvok would do would be a Vulcan lute.
Yes, that makes sense.
And then illogical Tuvok would whittle like an electric guitar.
Yes, to jam out with Harry and the Kimtones.
Harry and the Kimtones, yeah.
He'd be wearing some tie-dye, you know, Jerry Garcia.
No, he was all about the jazz, wasn't he?
Tuvok is all about the jazz, yes.
I was going to go more Axl Rose and Guns N' Roses type stuff.
Amazing.
Guns and Orchids.
Guns and Orchids, yes.
Yes. Yes, because he loves his orchids, bless him. That's brilliant.
One of my favorite things in Riddles is when Tuvok doesn't remember how to run the tactical station.
Yeah, and he almost accidentally launches photon torpedoes.
That just made me sad. It's like, oh,
it is sad. You really feel for the guy.
Yeah.
It's like anyone who's fallen from greatness, like the professional wrestler who can't wrestle anymore, or the musician who can't play guitar anymore, or whatever.
Yeah. He's going to bake now, though, isn't he?
Frosting. Frosting makes it all better.
If you can't practice your craft, bake a cake.
But is the cake thing part of a leftover from his Tuvix days?
Maybe.
Because Tuvix also was very adept in the kitchen.
So wait a minute. If I understand this right, so when Tuvok gets unhinged, he bakes a cake. Since Neelix bakes so many cakes, what happens when Neelix gets unhinged?
He lights a bunch of candles. But it's Neelix, so they'd be like, really,
garish candles.
Yeah, and they'd also be really kind of all interesting smells, but all ones that you light them all together and it would just smell weird.
They'd be all Leola root scented.
Oh, no.
Ugh. I might be imagining this, but don't we see Tuvok making some, like, candle wax art in Riddles?
He makes a wax flower and gives it to Neelix.
Wax flower, yes, that's what it is.
He does make a flower, yeah. Yeah, and he gives it to Neelix. That's when he's being all sad about the fact that he can't do his job anymore and he feels like he's not contributing.
See, if I were rewriting that episode, I would have unhinged Tuvok save the day. Like, these people would be on a quest to find, you know, some, or they, he would pacify them with his awesome wax flower. Like, I made you a present. And they'd go, oh, you're nice people after all. And then they'd, you know, go away and the episode would end. And unhinged Tuvok would have saved the day.
And I baked you a cake.
And I baked you a cake, yes. stay for dessert.
He baked a load of really nice cakes, and then he baked some kind of weird Leola root cake. I didn't notice there was one in there.
That was probably Neelix that made him do that.
It's just what he has in the kitchen, wasn't it? As we've said before, when Neelix is cooking, Leola root is a substitute for any ingredient he doesn't have.
No sugar, Leola root.
Yeah. No bananas, Leola root.
No coffee.
Leola root.
But I think it's kind of sad, though, because we kind of get to see Tuvok unhinged, and it's sad. He can't do the things he used to do. And yeah, it's fun to see him making art and stuff, but it should have fit into the story better. Like, that, like, you know, that other side of Tuvok that is valuable that we don't get to see very much should have saved the day in some way.
Yeah, I think that would have made more sense. I do agree. Because
to complete the metaphor, like, these things are necessary, too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, the only reason that we see him unable to do his job, I think, is because that's the reason for them to have to make him back how he was.
No one else on the ship knows how to fire phasers. We need Tuvok back.
Yeah. If he'd been able to still do his job as he could before, do we think that they would have chosen to, in inverted commas, fix him or leave him as he was? What do you think?
Well, wasn't that also the reasoning for getting rid of Tuvix? Because no one else could do Tuvok's job?
The whole thing's kind of interesting to think about. The positives and negatives of him being different.
Mm-hmm.
We only can see that Tuvok's point of view of what he thinks. We don't really know whether in the other Tuvok, if you like, if we want to treat them as two separate people, because they're almost like two separate people, whether he'd be like, no, I want to get change back. Or not. It's an odd thing.
You know, I feel like we're way overthinking this. This is not Build a Vulcan Workshop.
Here's your skin. Do you want the heart in there? Stop it.
Comes a little accessory Vulcan loot.
But that costs a lot extra. You better be ready to pay.
I hear what you're saying, but they can't just leave Tuvok unable to function. That's not cool.
No.
But when you say unable to function, what do you actually mean?
Like, do his job.
He was able to function, just not in the Tuvokian way that you're accustomed to.
Yeah, so my point is, if he was like that, but he could still do his job.
Oh, okay, so he could still fire face. He'd be with a smile.
I felt like the only reason that they were changing him back, that's not really a good way to put that, but the only reason that they were going to fix him was because he couldn't do his job. So if he could do his job but everything else was how he was, do you think they would have kept him like that?
No,
the Voyager thing to do is to hit the Voyager reset button.
Yeah, that I don't see them being able to deal with a different Tuvok.
Now, are you saying should they have?
I'm not talking about the writer's point of view here. I'm talking about the other characters. What they would have done.
Yeah, the other characters.
Yeah.
I think Janeway, I don't think she would have been able to adapt as well as I would have liked her to, but yeah.
Yeah.
No.
I'd like to think that they still would have changed him back because, again, it's this whole negativity around him being how he was. I like to feel like they don't actually think he's better that way. Do you see what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
I feel like that's what the episode's trying to say. Oh, he's better this way, and I'm not keen on that premise because I think we see that with Vulcans too often.
I find it, the idea of having an unhinged Vulcan as a permanent part of the crew, a fascinating idea. You know, like what if Cybok were, you know, permanent part of the Enterprise?
Let me feel your pain.
What does God need with a starship?
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting idea. It's just not a very, you know, Voyager in particular always hits the reset button, so I can't see them actually doing that. It's a fascinating idea, like a little thought experiment to think about what would Voyager have been like if that version of Tuvok had been the norm from there.
Yeah.
What would his growth path have been? You know, okay, yes, he learns to make wax flowers, but what else? What would that Tuvok have been? What would that character's development path be if that had been the new Tuvok? Tuvok 2.0.
And would have that affected his brain as much with the disease he got in Endgame? Would it have happened faster? Would it have happened at all?
That's an interesting point, because we don't really know a lot about that particular illness that he had, do we? We don't really know.
I actually love the way he uses logic in Endgame. He's like, you can't be Captain Janeway because Captain Janeway comes on Tuesdays and today is Wednesday. Yeah. So logically, you're not who you say you are.
Yeah.
I love that misuse of logic.
His logic is still intact, even though the rest of him isn't.
Yes. I love how he goes, Commander Barclay's visits are erratic.
Yes. And nobody was surprised. Nobody was surprised.
No. It's like, yeah, you got it right there.
So what do we think about that Tuvok that we see in future Endgame?
Again, it makes me sad.
Yeah.
To see Tuvok so un-Tuvokian.
I think the saddest thing for me is seeing Admiral Janeway have to say goodbye to her friend. Yes, it's sad to see Tuvok, you know, getting unhinged because of this disease, but, you know, Admiral Janeway saying goodbye to her friend who can't really appreciate the force of her saying goodbye is really sad.
Yeah.
But she also knows she's going to see the old Tuvok.
The better
if
Tuvok.
If she's successful.
Or not better Tuvok in his estimation.
Well, I don't know. Is he better at that point? Maybe he is from that particular Tuvok, because at that point he's lost ability to really function, hasn't he? I mean, I don't know what he's writing on those bits of paper, but I'm guessing it's not something to rival Einstein. I'm just going out on a limb there. It's a different slant on it again, isn't it? Like every single time we see one of these unhinged episodes, it's different. It's not quite the same thing that we've seen before. Because like you said, he's still got his logic. He's still, there's still a fundamental part of being Vulcan in there. And yet he's really lost his ability to rationalize and his ability to sort of really understand exactly what's going on around him. And I think it's a less functional Tuvok, I think, than we see in Riddles.
And I guess that's what's so fun for me. I like seeing the many different ways that Tuvok can be unhinged. Mm-hmm. You know, we've got angry Tuvok, we've got forgetful Tuvok, we've got artistic Tuvok, we've got mentally incapacitated Tuvok in Endgame. So there's a lot of different ways that Tuvok can come unhinged. He's a complex guy.
Yeah.
Underneath that tough Vulcan exterior, there's a multifaceted, unhinged individual.
Well, there is. And I think you say that slightly in jest, but I think that's actually a fundamental point about Vulcans in general. Which is the fact that a lot of people think, oh, they're really emotionless. And it's like, no, they're not emotionless.
They're intensely emotional.
They're like swans, you know. They look serene on the surface, but underneath there's all manner of paddling going on. And I like that about them. I think that's the really interesting thing about Vulcans.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not this the fact that they're emotionless. It's the fact that they aren't emotionless. They're full of emotion and that's the reason why they've sort of developed to be the way they are, so that they can keep a lid on it.
Yeah, intensely emotional, but controlled.
I love the swan metaphor. Like, you know, if you back into a herd of angry swans, or like back an angry swan into a corner, it'll go all crazy on you. Like, so if you back an angry Vulcan into a corner, he'll go all crazy on you.
Yeah.
Which we kind of see something like that in Workforce, when he's all agitated and, you know, the flashbacks and... And they keep trying to, you know, repress his memories. Because he'll remember, like, seeing Janeway in the hospital with him. And she's getting the procedure done. And, yeah.
Yeah, I find it interesting that Tuvok is the one that's remembering stuff more than everybody else. He's the one that keeps remembering what's happened before. I wonder whether that's something to do with his mental discipline.
Oh, it has to. And the way he has different compartments in his brain to keep different information, just how he deals with things.
Is that true? Vulcans have different compartments in their brains to compartmentalize
information? I think that Tuvok does.
It makes sense.
Honestly.
Like little you know, dresser drawers, you know, bureau
no,
drawers.
No, kind of like his mind castle. And he has different rooms.
Different rooms.
It's, you know, it sounds like one of those old Disney, like, like educational shorts, like with Donald Duck. Like, okay, now you're in Donald Duck's mind, and here's one drawer, and it's got certain kind of thoughts in it. And here's another drawer, and it's got another kind of thoughts in it.
I think that totally works. That makes perfect sense to me. I absolutely believe that that's what Tuvok's brain is like.
I'd like to take a tour.
Like Vulcan post office boxes inside his mind, right? Just, you know, open up one little door.
Are they little card catalogs, like from the library?
Yeah,
of
right.
Of course exactly. They are. Of course Tuvok's brain is organized according to the Dewey Decimal System.
So, you know, this makes so much sense because there'll be things that are like locked away, like, you know, those deep emotions or those deep memories that he can't deal with. He's got his little lock box in there that, you know, things he doesn't access very much.
Yeah.
That's a great metaphor, actually.
That's what he calls it.
The vault, yes.
Yeah, I think that's, yeah, I'm down with that, totally. Yeah, definitely.
There's like an automated 7-year timer for the Ponfar box.
It just opens on its own.
I'm just thinking it looks a bit like a bomb, you know, with those red countdown numbers on it. And it's ticking as well.
Your mental alarm clock is ticking? Yeah.
The Ponfar box it's got a bomb countdown and it's ticking. That definitely makes sense. That makes a lot of sense.
So another one of my favorite Tuvok unhinged scenes, and it's barely an unhinged scene. I almost didn't include this one, but the scene in Cold Fire where Kes is going to light his, you know, his head on fire or whatever she's doing.
Set fire to
his brain. She's melting him.
Yeah, it's not really unhinged, but it's some incredibly intense Tim Russ acting. Yeah.
Yes.
Definitely. It's how he handles with, yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, anyone would struggle with Vulcan or otherwise with their brain being melted, I think.
Yeah, and coming up with a way to act that out is amazing. I never would have thought of that. I'd been like, okay, my brain is melting. I'm just going to fall on the floor. No, his was, and his eyes bulging. It was awesome.
For those of you at home, Kay is acting this out for us.
A little bit.
Kind of looked like the Scream.
Yes, it did actually. Well, it does look a bit like that. The starry eyes, anyway.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it's a great little moment, isn't it? I like repression. Not necessarily because of the bits where we see Tuvok actually attacking the Marquis, because we do see him like attack Chakotay and stuff.
Yes, he does attack people.
Yeah. It's not necessarily those bits that I like. I like the bits where he's trying to do the investigation and he's just getting really frustrated because he's like, this defies logic and he can't make sense of it because he hasn't included the possibility that it's him. And you just see him getting more and more frustrated and it starts to creep out. And that's the bit that I really like in repression. I really like seeing him. It's like, my logic is failing me. And that at that point is where it all starts to sort of spiral down a bit.
So you like that there's two endpoints. There's like calm and rational Tuvok, and then there's like out of control, totally unhinged Tuvok. You like this gray spot in the middle where he's starting to lose his logic. He's got some tension building, but he hasn't come fully unhinged yet.
Yeah, well, I think that's probably the bit that we see the least, because when we see him unhinged in a lot of the other bits we've already talked about, it's a bit of a switch type thing. It's like, oh, we see him as normal, calm, rational Tuvok, and then we see him as flipped out Tuvok, if you like. But in this, we see the progression, and I like that.
Now, what I like about repression is how Tuvok is able to resist Tiro and everything he's saying at the end and come back to being Tuvok.
Yeah.
That says a lot about him. Personally, emotionally, logically, it just go Tuvok, fight the man.
That's a great point. He does a great job of just sort of returning back to his old self. It's kind of Voyager reset button, but it's also like personal stability. Even when he gets unhinged, he gets right back to his center pretty naturally.
Yeah. Yeah, and that's a really good point in repression, actually, because that's where, you know, the calm, rational Vulcan part of him is shown to be something positive, because if it had been somebody else, maybe they wouldn't have come back from that.
Yeah.
So I like that. Yeah, I like that a lot. Repression is a really interesting episode generally. I like the fact that we get to see a lot of characters we don't often get to see as well.
and the return of Chakotay in leather.
In the leather. I knew you were going to say it. I was leaving the door open for you there.
Thank you. I walked right through it.
I was going to say that Suter returns to his default pretty well too, but it doesn't turn out as well.
No, but then he dies really nobly in the end, doesn't he? So it's all good.
He does.
That's true, he does.
So I think he has quite a satisfying character arc, for me anyway.
Definitely. He redeemed himself greatly.
Yeah. Well, they don't really know what to do with him, do they? And there's this whole, oh, he's locked in quarters and he wants something more productive to do. And then ultimately he manages to sacrifice himself to save everybody else, so...
I don't think they could have afforded having Brad Dourif on every episode.
No, I don't think so.
He was in demand.
Yeah.
He does some collaborative botany with Tuvok.
Collaborative botany, that's a brilliant phrase.
I also do love this. This is a bit of a tangent, but I do love the fact that Tuvok likes breeding his rare Vulcan orchids.
But I thought of something. Did he possibly learn that from Captain Sulu?
Oh, gosh, maybe.
Maybe.
Ooh, well, that's canon now.
That just hit me. I'm like, whoa.
Head canon.
Because in the original series, we see, you know, Sulu dealing with plants and botany and all that. Perhaps that's where Tuvok picked it up. That's okay, awesome. I'm sticking with that.
So Tuvok latched onto the botany and totally didn't pick up the fencing.
Correct.
Got it.
I think that's probably the better way around.
It's the most logical.
I don't think we'd want Tuvok topless fencing down the corridors of Voyager, would we?
But we did see Tuvok topless and bottomless.
Yes, yes, we did.
Just not fencing. Just arriving at his station to do his work.
Yeah, wasn't that interesting? That's a revealing little moment, isn't it?
Haven't we all had those dreams?
A Vulcan's worst nightmare.
Well, yeah, that's it, isn't it? Because they're very...
Well, they prize being composed. They like being perceived as keeping their composure together, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's a really strong sense of pride, isn't it? And they hate being embarrassed. I think being embarrassed for a Vulcan is like the worst thing.
And they're a very modest people.
Yeah.
They don't talk about sexuality. They don't talk about much. That is like, woof.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can't really come back from nudity.
No.
Your modesty's kind of gone at that point.
Yeah. And it's as well, it's like, it's not just the fact that we see that and we see his reaction to how horrified he is. It's the fact that further on through the episode, we get these, oh, what did you dream about, Tuvok? And he's like, nothing. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. I love that.
I think the contrast between naked Tuvok and naked Q is an interesting contrast. Like, Q's like, here I am.
Yes, unabashedly. Yeah. I'm naked and I don't care.
Tuvok's like, does somebody have a towel, please?
Naked in Janeway's bathtub.
Andy shows up in The Next Generation on the bridge.
Yes.
Yeah, he was wearing a uniform in Janeway's bathtub.
Oh, was he?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, that seems bizarre, but I just assumed he'd be naked. It would have made more sense if he was naked in the bath.
It would have. And he should have brought a little rubber ducky with him.
That would have been awesome. He should have had a rubber duck. And a shower cap.
That would have been great.
Rubber duck and a shower cap.
Rubber ducky.
And one of those back scrubbers.
Oh, that's great.
No, come on. No. This would have been way fun if Tuvok had showed up on the bridge that way. If he walked, you know, if he had his, like, you know, hair cap on and a back scrubby thing. If he walked onto the bridge wearing, you know, instead of just absolutely nothing, if he has, like, a bath toy with him. Wouldn't that be even more embarrassing?
Yes.
Like, how could we make being naked on the bridge even more embarrassing for Tuvok?
Bring a rubber duck.
And wear fuzzy slippers.
Oh, yeah.
Even if you ditch the naked thing, right? Okay, yes, it's embarrassing for Tuvok to walk onto the bridge naked, but like, what would be the most embarrassing thing you could imagine? Okay, yes, showing up on the bridge naked would be embarrassing for anyone, but for Tuvok, what would be the most embarrassing scene you could imagine, naked or otherwise?
We have the whole Pon Farr thing, don't we? So I think we're probably...
Is that embarrassing?
Well, it's the most embarrassing thing that happens to him, I think, whilst we're in the run of the show. Because,
oh, definitely.
I mean, look at him having to explain it to Tom Paris, you know. And we see with Spock as well in the original series how much they hate talking about it. They just absolutely hate talking about it. So yeah, to have him have to explain that to Tom
who's somebody who, let's face it, hasn't got the best reputation of being discreet.
One of the things that comes to mind, it's not Tuvok, but it's another Vulcan. You remember that scene in Star Trek The Next Generation in the episode Sarek, when Sarek, Spock's father, sheds a tear when they're playing classical music in 10-4 like they often do on Star Trek The Next Generation? Mm-hmm. That's embarrassing for a Vulcan, just shedding it. Something as simple as shedding mm-hmm. a tear, that's as embarrassing as walking onto the bridge naked for a Vulcan.
And that was just heartbreaking.
Yeah.
That one tear was just, gut-wrenching.
Yeah, well, I mean, they pride themselves on their control, don't they? So it's mm-hmm. a loss of control. But I think, generally speaking, on top of just a general loss of control, they are incredibly... There's this incredible prudishness about them.
They're modest.
I don't really know why, because you'd think, logically speaking, there's nothing embarrassing about sex and stuff like that.
It's logical.
Yeah, it's logical. It's right? just it's a reproductive thing. So I don't really know what their hang-up is about that.
I get what you're saying. But why are they so modest?
Yeah. Yeah, they're very Victorian about that.
When they, especially when they perceive everything as just a natural function of life or of procreation or whatever, why be modest about it? Right.
Well, yeah, and I mean, Ponfar is incredibly logical as an idea, because the fact that they only mm-hmm. have it once every 7 years means that it's easier for them to keep their control the rest of the time. So you'd think it would make perfect sense. So I don't really get why they're so hung up around it. I guess it's just a hangover from the original series, from Amok time.
Could be, yeah.
Well, what would the other option be? So what would still logical but non-modest Vulcans be like?
I think it would all be very transactional, basically, is where I'm coming from.
Let me whip out my credit card? Like, what do you mean?
No, not in a monetary sense, because they don't really have money in the future. But I mean, that's the kind of attitude. It would be very sort of like...
Take my Catra, please.
Yeah. they'd be very businesslike about it, is what I mean.
Yes, I agree with you there. Absolutely. Well, you guys have to remember in Enterprise, there was a reference to the Vulcan nightclub that was around the corner from the Quantum Cafe in San Francisco? Mm,
yes.
What do you think that place is like? Transactional?
Well, quite possibly transactional, but I imagine there are a lot of candles.
Definitely a lot of candles. Possibly there's an open mic night for poetry reading.
That would make sense.
So rather than getting drunk, do they get unhinged?
Well, I don't know. Maybe they drink Vulcan brandy.
Or just tea.
Yeah.
It's a tea bar.
And there's some Vulcan lute music. In one corner, you've got some people chanting.
It's like the 24th century equivalent of Tivana or something.
Yes. Except I don't remember any people chanting in Tivana recently, but I could have missed it.
There's a reason that we snicker at the term Vulcan nightclub, right? Like, yuck, yuck, yuck. What would that be like? Ha, ha, ha.
Well, yeah, exactly. And it's back to this whole idea of, Vulcans are boring, isn't it?
Yeah, I totally agree with you. That just doesn't do Vulcans justice. They're more complex than that. They're more interesting than that. Their logic serves a better purpose than that, than just to make them boring.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But there's really no good way to show that, for, like, humans to understand.
Again, I still think Vulcans are just this giant metaphor for humans. Most of us are a little unhinged most of the time about something, and we're more like unhinged Tuvok than cool and calm and collected Tuvok.
Oh, definitely.
Yeah.
I'm definitely angry Tuvok.
Which Tuvok are you, Kay?
I am wax modeling Tuvok.
Zachary?
Dare we ask?
Which Tuvok?
Are you transactional Tuvok?
Yes, I'll go with that. If I had to pick a Tuvok, I'm transactional
okay.
Tuvok.
Good to know. Good to know. You're logical Tuvok is what you are. Don't try and kid yourself that you're anything else. We haven't talked about flashback. It's not unhinged so much as, because he doesn't really kind of go too crazy, does he? He has this thing that he can't get out of his head more than anything else.
He must be crazy if he's trying to lecture Captain Sulu.
That is true.
And giving the nerve pinch to Janice Rand and stealing her uniform.
That is amazing. Although, my two favorite things about this episode are, well, you never brought me tea. And Janeway in that uniform. She looks amazing in that mm-hmm. uniform. She just rocks that uniform out.
They made an action figure of her mm. in that uniform.
I would really that. I'm not surprised that they did, actually, because she does look great.
Seriously, though, I love this episode. I love that Tuvok is so brazen and so brash as a young Vulcan ensign to tell the captain, Captain Sulu, no less, what he should be doing to follow orders.
Mm-hmm.
And he gives a great lecture about loyalty and looking after the people you've served with. It's a great lecture back. And it's a learning point for Tuvok is what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
And it's definitely a lecture that sticks with him because you see his loyalty to Janeway.
Yeah, you definitely do. It's interesting to see, you know, that sort of start of his career, Tuvok, that younger Tuvok, and you do really see the difference, which is great because, you know, with a character like a Vulcan where they are very, very logical and very stoic, it's hard sometimes to see any character progression over time because mm-hmm. they just always seem like they're there with the control and everything. But he is markedly different at that younger age.
Well, there's an interplay, right? I mean, humans can learn a lot from Vulcans about being more logical and keeping their emotions in check. And Vulcans have to learn a lot from humans about loyalty and friendship and uniquely human virtues.
Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, if Tuvok hadn't had that lesson, he wouldn't be as reliable or as good of a crewmate, a friend on Voyager as he ended up being.
Yeah, so it is nice to see that progression and it's nice to kind of go, oh, so that's how he's got to here. I like that a lot.
So what happens when Vulcans get unhinged around each other? Like, humans tend to kind of support each other, like, oh, I'll give you a hug kind of thing. You know, what do Vulcans have the equivalent of, I'm going to look out for you, I'm sorry you're depressed, I'm sorry you're unhinged, let me take care of you kind of support structure?
I don't see that.
No.
Because, again, it goes back to their not wanting to talk about anything personal.
So they just go hang out in the Catrick Ark and...
They go sit in their quarters, stare at their little candle,
meditate.
Get it back together.
Try and build a tower out of whatever those blocks were that Tuvok has at one point.
Stick whatever's bugging you in that room, in your brain castle.
In the vault.
And shut the door.
Put it in the vault.
Lock it in the vault.
Shut the door. Like, how do Vulcans blow off steam, you know, if they're feeling unhinged?
It's all a bit transactional.
Well, they go to the holodeck, they create a holographic Neelix, and they
strangulate it.
That's what they do.
That is what they do. They either do that or they meditate or they build towers out of blocks.
Like the idea of a Betazoid becoming a counselor like we see in Star Trek The Next Generation, that makes so much sense, right? I get that. What would a Vulcan counselor be like? Like a Vulcan, you know, psychotherapy counseling session. What would that be like? You know, would they meditate? Do they do a mind meld? Do they play a Vulcan lute? What do they do?
I see a lot of meditation.
Yeah, I see a lot of meditation. We probably see it with Kes and Tuvok. I imagine it would be a lot like that kind of relationship.
I sort of feel like they'd go Socratic. I feel like they would actually like do a full-on like Socratic Q&A session to try to draw out the illogic of whatever is driving the emotion.
And how does that make you feel?
We get to see a little bit of this in Gravity, right? The old Vulcan master is basically doing that with young Tuvok. Mm-hmm. He is getting him to see the illogic of his ways.
Well, yeah, there you go. That's probably the best example we have of that, isn't it? That's the best example we have of a Vulcan, or for want of a better way of putting it, counseling another Vulcan.
Yeah, I don't think... Can you think of another example? I can't off the top of my head.
No, because even Spock was counseled by his mother.
In Star Trek VI, we see Spock doing a bit of a motivational speech with Valeris.
So Vulcan therapy involves staring at Chagall paintings.
It involves motivational quotes as well. I really like that little scene there with them, and that's one of my favorite scenes actually from the original series movies.
And I think what I love about it though, and maybe it's because it's Spock, and maybe Vulcans aren't as logical as they like to think they are, you know. So I'm not really sure which, but what I love about that is that the answer to her question, Spock essentially says, "Well, you have to have faith that things will unfold as they should." And that's not a logical concept. There's no basis in logic for that. This is him being illogical, and that's the Vulcan standpoint, that, you know, just have faith that the universe will unfold, and that gives you the serenity to approach things logically.
But still, Spock is only half Vulcan, so maybe that was more of his human side saying that.
He is, but then I think it... Whilst it might not on the face of it seem logical, I think it is quite a technique that's used in sort of meditation and like mindfulness ideas and all that type of thing. You know, this idea that if you can't control it, you just have to learn to accept it. And that's kind of what he's saying for me. And by in being able to do that, that's how you learn to rise above the emotional attachment. Right? It's like, well, you can't affect these events, so why become emotional as a result of them when it's not going to change anything? That's kind of how I see it anyway.
Vulcan Serenity is strange because it's a little bit Buddhist and it's a little bit Spinozan and it's a little bit, you know, yes, it's got the formal logic thing in there, but it's complex. It's not as simple as detachment.
I mean, when you're talking about whether or not you think that's logical and whether Vulcans are as logical as they make out to be, I think we kind of have to come back round to that quote that we get fairly early on, where Janeway's basically saying to Tuvok, well, you can use logic to justify anything. That's its strength and its weakness.
Yeah, which by extension, Vulcans can justify almost anything.
Yeah.
About themselves, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, exactly. So it's like, oh, they're not that logical, but then it's just, it's how you use the logic. It's how you work your way around that kind of problem and what and the conclusion that you come to.
But to bring it back to Tuvok, who counsels Tuvok in Voyager? Neelix does, definitely in Riddles.
Janeway does.
Janeway, yeah. I don't know whether Tuvok has a close relationship with anybody else, really.
No. Kes.
Yeah.
Kes would be the Kes only
earlier
one.
On. They kind of help each other.
But I think Captain Janeway telling Tuvok that she's disappointed in him for the first time makes a big impact on him.
Yeah, that hurt him deeply, yes.
Because he actually cares. He's not as detached as he likes to portray.
Yeah, yeah, that's interesting, isn't it? Because it's... What is he feeling there? Because obviously he's... I'm just trying to think what's actually going on in his head. Because if he's not feeling emotional about it, but there's obviously something going on. Like he strives to do his best. And he feels like he's not done that. He feels like he's failed in some way. But how he processes that without the emotion is an interesting thought.
Well, I think you're getting to the heart of Vulcan modesty in a way. I mean, this is your earlier question, right? Vulcans like to portray that they don't care what other people really think, but they really deeply do, and they just don't portray it. And so that's at the heart of their modesty, too. They care how they're perceived.
Yeah. Yeah, so it's not about the fact that they don't feel things and don't react to things. It's the fact that they do, and they suppress that, and it's how well they manage to suppress that at any given time.
Yeah.
So this doesn't even really qualify as a Tuvok unhinged moment, but I like seeing Tuvok frustrated that he can't whip the Maquis crewman into shape in Learning Curve when he's trying to train them to be more Starfleet-like.
Yeah, and the thing I find interesting about that is that he must have... Because we do know that he's been a lecturer prior to this, don't we? That he has worked at Starfleet.
Yes.
Yeah, he says he's taught at Starfleet Academy.
And
before.
I find it interesting that he seems surprised that he can't instantly get them to do whatever he wants. And I'm sure that he's had that with cadets before. So I find that interesting. Maybe the whole Starfleet Academy discipline idea is somewhat different. Maybe cadets are easier to whip into shape or they aren't there, kind of thing.
I would think so, because they want to be there.
Yeah.
Their heart and soul is in going forward with the Academy. It's not there with the Maquis.
No.
Definitely not.
And we get to see some great stuff from Neelix and Tuvok, right? Neelix gets to explain to Tuvok that it's not the cadets that are rigid and inflexible. It's actually Tuvok that's rigid and inflexible.
Yeah. Well, that's the thing, isn't it? Because he holds everybody else to the same exacting standard.
Mm-hmm.
And you'd think that he'd have learnt over the years with humans that that's not going to work. Starfleet gives the structure whereby Vulcans fit. They fit in well because it's all very regimented and all the rules are laid down, and that works really well with the Vulcans' logical controlled brain. So I think people who don't fit into that probably frustrate him, which is probably why Neelix frustrates him so much as well, because he doesn't fit into that Starfleet mold.
He doesn't fit into any mold.
No.
So it reminds me of this movie. I don't know if you guys have seen it. It's Uptown Girls with Brittany Murphy and Dakota Fanning from quite a few years ago now. But there's this great scene in that movie where Dakota Fanning, as a little girl, is rigid and not having a lot of fun. She likes her structure. She's like a little miniature Tuvok. And Brittany Murphy is like Neelix, the fun babysitter that wants to teach her to dance and teach her to appreciate music. And at some point, Dakota Fanning says to Brittany Murphy, "Fundamentals are the building blocks of fun." And that's kind of the Vulcan worldview, that if you give people structure and fundamentals, they will rise to the occasion and become the best versions of themselves. So he thinks that he can impose structure on these wannabe Starfleet cadets and they will become like Starfleet officers.
Yeah.
The fun will now commence.
Yeah.
The fun will now commence.
Well, yes. Yeah. I mean, the parallels are there, aren't they?
Yeah, like picture like a miniature Seven of Nine. That is Dakota Fanning in that movie.
Well, that's the thing, because whilst you were saying that, I was just thinking about the episode where we see Seven trying to structure the Borg kids' day and like, mm-hmm. fun will now commence, as you just said. Yeah.
That's it. It's exactly. Fundamentals of the building
blocks
of fun.
It's the exact same idea.
See, now you have to watch that movie because it's either a miniature Tuvok or a miniature Seven of Nine and an older babysitter Neelix. You got to watch it.
If you watch Alien.
After you watch Alien. And Bedknobs and Broomsticks. Well, it's been fun talking about Tuvok strangling Neelix, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on Trek FM this past week. So here's a quick look at some of the other things you may have missed elsewhere on the network.
Previously on Trek.fm. Standard Orbit.
My casting choices, okay, would be for Ruck, you got to go with Dave Bautista, right? He's Drax in Guardians of the Galaxy. He played Jinx in...
Inspector?
Yeah, was that Jinx? What's his name? Hinks, Mr.
Hinks. Ooh, Mr. Hinks, yeah, Mr. Hinks.
That's the wrong James Bond film, everybody.
The 602 Club.
Going back to the Gotham thing really quickly, I know this is semi-derailing. Why would you want to move to Gotham? I mean, he has to have been there. It's like the picture that he has on his wall is this beautiful, shining, like, daytime view, if I'm not mistaken, of Gotham, which I don't think we ever see. It was like, I'm not really sure. Charm City looks quite nice.
Saturday morning trek.
It's very much like a continuation of the original series.
You know what? You raise a very good point, and it's one we probably should have talked about earlier, is that we talk so much about the animation and the limitations of the medium that we forget about the writing. And overall, it's pretty strong throughout the run.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check out these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button. That helps us out greatly and makes it easier for other listeners to find the show as they search iTunes. If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Stitcher, TuneIn, SoundCloud, Windows Phone, and of course you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website and grab the RSS link as well.
Another way you can help keep all of our shows coming to each week is to become a patron of the network on Patreon. If you visit patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you'll find our current goals and different milestone contribution levels, along with all the great perks we have for you. These perks include early access to content, exclusive content, producer credits, seats on our content development team, and more. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you can find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take a moment to acknowledge the rest of the TTJ team from around the network. Specifically, we'd like to thank C. Brian Jones, the founder and publisher of Trek.fm, our executive producers, Matthew Rushing and Kenneth Tripp, Aaron Harvey, our art director, Richard Marquez, our production manager, and Brandon Shea Mutala, our Patreon manager. And we want to give a special thank you and a shout out to our three associate producers here on To The Journey, the one and only Dr. Bruce Lish, Ju Kim, and our good friend Norm Lau. Thank you for your support of Trek.fm and To The Journey.
And don't forget to check out Enterprise in Space, a project of the non-profit National Space Society. Visit enterpriseinspace.org to find out more and get your seat on the mission. Also check out audible.com, offering more than 150,000 titles for your desktop or mobile device. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm.
Well, if you'd like to get in touch with us, there are several ways you can contact us. You can contact us via a form on Trek FM's website. Just go to trek.fm/contact. If you'd like to leave us a voicemail, you can look in the sidebar on our To The Journey show page on the Trek FM website, or you can go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. On Twitter, we're just under the handle @trekfm. Same thing on Facebook. You can find us at facebook.com/trekfm. And while you're on Facebook, find us in the Babel Conference. The Babel Conference is Trek FM's listeners-only discussion group. Just type The Babel Conference, that's B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook. Or you can go to our website at trek.fm and click Discussion on the menu bar. We also invite you to leave a rating and a review of To the Journey on iTunes. We'd love to hear your feedback and suggestions for the show. So, Suzanne, when you're not hanging out in Vulcan nightclubs in San Francisco, where can our listeners find you on the interwebs and around the Trek FM network?
Well, you can find me occasionally hanging out in the Babel Conference. You can also find me on Twitter. My handle is at KJaneway8. That's the letter K, Janeway, and the number 8. Kay, if someone wanted to commission you to make some orchids out of candle wax, where could they find you?
Well, they could find me in the Babel Conference. And if they want to look me up on Twitter, my handle is ChocoWeeble. Zachary, when you're not baking pistachio cake with paracream sauce, where can people find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on Trek FM as co-host of Metatrek's Trek FM show on Star Trek and philosophy, along with my co-host there, Mike Morrison. You can always find me in the Babel Conference if you want to talk about Star Trek with me there. And you can find me on Twitter. My handle is just my name, at Zachary Fruhling. That's Zachary, Z-A-C-H-A-R-Y, Fruhling, F-R-U-H-L-I-N-G.
Next week, one of us is due to go through Pon Farr. But until then, this has been To the Journey.